Emerging from a gateway into a redoubt filled with pre-dark technology, Ryan and his band encounter a unique form of mutant life inhabiting the lower levels. But the upper levels of the fortified redoubt are under the control of a half-mad former SEC man hell-bent on vengeance, who manipulates Ryan and the others to jumpstart his private war against two local barons. Under the harsh and pitiless glare of the rad-blasted desert sun, the companions must keep their survival instincts at a fever pitch to make it out of this one. Deathlands 65, Hellbenders. Deathlands Bloodfire is a Cutting Audio production. Copyright 2005, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Richard Rowan, with Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Timberlee Chanel, Kate Torrey, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Vocal editing by Matt Webb. Sound design by Brian Patton and Dan Smith. The Deathlands theme was composed by Mark Ashby. If you enjoyed Deathlands, be sure to look for James Axler's Outlanders, available at roadstops everywhere, at 1-800-670-5220, or at www.cuttingaudio.com, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free screensavers, ringtones, and games. Keep listening for a preview from Outlanders after these announcements. From Outlanders 24, Equinox Zero.
The archers aboard the junk knocked their long arrows, aimed, and a dozen bowstrings hummed simultaneously as they loosed a flight of arrows at the dragon ship. Only a few landed on deck. Most bounced away from the shields lining a rail or those on the arms of the warriors. The junk began a portside board turn just as the rocket launcher in the hands of Sif fired with an ear-knocking report. With a sound as of a gigantic piece of stiff canvas being ripped, the rocket screamed across the surface of the sea, a trail of sparks and smoke wavering in its wake. The warhead detonated on the junk amidships, just above the waterline. The bowmen staggered backward, drenched by the geyser of water fountaining up over the side. Men went sprawling. Some stayed on their feet by clutching the deck rail. A man wearing a short white jacket and an orange headband shouted stridently to the sailors, obviously trying to rally them. Zakat guessed him to be the captain, since the men nodded to him deferentially. Once again, the archers took up position at the rail. Zakat braced the barrel of the revolver on his left forearm, squinted through the Red Hawk scope, and brought the man's head into target acquisition, framing it in the center of the crosshairs. He squeezed the trigger, and a single shot cracked like the snapping of a whip. The man's headband floated away, surrounded by a mist of blood. Twisting in a clumsy pirouette, he fell behind the rail of the junk and out of sight. Faintly, he heard an outburst of shock and fear. Zakat turned toward Snorri and gestured sharply.
Ram them!
Snorri put the helm hard over, and the Fafnir's dragon figurehead snarled at the center of the junk. Beneath the ship's bow, just below the surface, stretched a long ramming sprit. It was about 10 feet in length, made of sturdy oak and wrapped with hammered-out strips of metal riveted around it for reinforcement. The shaft terminated in a broad-bladed iron triangle, like a plowshare. Zakat grasped the handrail as the dragon ship hove closer. Then, in a tumult of screams and splintering crashes, the hulls collided. The impact threw half of the Tulian warriors off their feet. They quickly regained their footing and raced to the bow. They drove long lances into the junk's side to serve as makeshift scaling ladders, since the ship rode 8 or more feet higher in the water than the Fafnir. Then, as a final volley of arrows arced down, the Tulians formed a multi-legged tortoise by holding and locking their shields over their heads. They hurled their grapnels aboard the junk, the metal hooks biting and holding into the deck rail. With wild howls, they swarmed up the chains. Zakat watched them board the junk and sighed heavily. The sound echoed hollowly within the confines of his helmet. He knew the power of causatry notwithstanding. He couldn't rest on his laurels and assume the Tulians would respect his decision to remain aboard the Fafnir. Tulian respect was not easily given and always required a booster shot of action and risk. That was one reason Chaffee was the butt of so many cruel jokes, since he never participated directly in their attacks. Shouting to Sif to join him, Zakat scrambled to the bow and leaped over the gunwales and across the narrow space between the two ships. Once he gained the deck of the junk, he and Sif, in a flying wedge, struck the crew like a steel-shot avalanche. If the Tulians expected an easy victory, they were sadly mistaken. The junk's crew made a crazed, animal-desperate charge against the invaders, and for a few minutes, it was a confused, brutal, bloody battle on the decks. The sailors were armed with curved swords, and they used them well. Bragi, one of the youngest of the Tulians, had his neck sliced halfway through by one of the flat blades. Blood spouted from the half-severed stump, a fountain that splashed across Sip's face. She licked her lips, and the taste of the man's blood pushed her forward, shrieking and hacking with her battle axe. The other warriors followed her screaming lead. The sailors were divided in broken groups and were chopped down or driven over the sides. Some closed ranks and fought back with their swords, but they were overwhelmed by the armored Tullians, most of whom towered a full head and shoulders over the tallest of the Asians. Lakat glanced back at Sif and called to her, but she was unable to hear over the battle cry and screams of pain. The Valkyrie had gone berserker. Heaving a sailor's corpse aside, she leaped into a gap with the battle axe. Three men fell to the weapon, three swipes that split them down the middle before they could think how to engage the fearsome giantess. She used her axe to cut a bloody swath for Zakat to follow. Curved swords in the hands of terrified sailors menaced her, but they were less than useless. The swinging axe sheared through metal, flesh, and bone, beating them to the deck by the sheer weight of the blows. Zakat followed Sif, managing to fire accurate shots as he ran across the reeling deck. Two men went down, then three and four, knocked back over the stations they were assigned to defend. Zakat emptied the last of the weapon cylinder into a sailor's face, shattering his head and blowing it back over an archer trying to get into position behind Sif. Temporarily blinded by blood and flying brain matter, the bowman held his arrow, knocked but unloosed. Zakat went low, dropping the pistol and drawing a knife from his belt. He hit the man with his shield. The bowman dropped to the deck, and as the man's head snapped backward from the impact, Zakat slashed his throat with the knife. Scarlet rivered down the front of the tunic as he clutched at his neck. Elbowing him aside, Sif screamed hoarsely and chopped off the man's head, the axe blade burying itself deeply into the deck planks. Her eyes were wild and glassy. As she struggled to wrench it loose, Zakat took advantage of the opportunity to strike her across the face. He had learned there was no other way to get her attention, to check her battle madness. He pointed out the survivors of the junk's crew, how they had taken refuge on the quarterdeck. There were only a handful of them, less than half a dozen, but they were still armed with the longbows and equally long arrows, not to mention a few swords. Tullian warriors, under locked shields, stormed the quarterdeck, but they were driven back by a shower of arrows. Three of them hobbled out of the fray, tugging at the shafts protruding from various parts of their bodies. Zakat saw a brass tripod-mounted telescope bolted to the quarterdeck. A man stood beside it, waving his arms in a strange, rhythmic manner. He held a pair of long-handled, flat, paddle-like fans in his hand. Zakat only glimpsed the complex symbols inscribed on their surfaces, but he knew the sailor was using them to signal to an observer. Zakat whispered to Sif, then bellowed an order to the Tullians. They roared and made another concerted charge, milling below the quarterdeck with their shields raised. A salvo of arrows struck them with a series of semi-musical gongs. Then Sif bounded forward, brandishing her unsheathed broadsword. Gracefully, she leaped atop the massed shields and ran along them as if she were crossing a stream by jumping from rock to rock. Shouting in fear and anger, the sailors met her as she alighted on the elevated deck housing. Fainting with the sword, Sif sent the sailor to her left, stumbling to the side. Sif spun instead, facing a man with a heavy sledge lifted over his head, holding the long wooden shaft in both hands. Teeth bared in a fierce grimace, the sailor brought the hammer down.
If you can't wait for the next installment of your favorite series to hit the shelves, plug into Cutting Audio's website and download it for your computer or digital player. It'll be online before anywhere else. You'll also get free screensavers, ringtones, games, and other goodies. www.cuttingaudio.com